When was the last time you heard a child referred to as obedient? It's probably been a while. That's too bad because the best research tells us that obedient children are happy children. And from my experience as a family psychologist, the parents of obedient children are happy parents. Since all parents want their children to be happy, the question becomes, how does one get a child to obey? Is there some trick to it? Well, there certainly are a lot of parents who think so. They believe that proper discipline is a matter of using the right methods, techniques, and strategies, what I call consequence delivery systems. Parents have been using these behavior modification-based methods since they became popular in the 1960s, seemingly to no avail. Would anyone argue that today's kids are more obedient than kids were several generations ago? I don't think so. The reason these methods and techniques don't work is that proper discipline is not a matter of proper methods. It's a matter of a proper attitude on the part of the parent. Let me illustrate the point. Let's say that for a week, I observe the classroom of a grade school teacher who has the reputation of being the best disciplinarian in her district. She consistently has fewer behavior problems than any of her colleagues. What is she doing? She's making her expectations perfectly clear, which means, first, she communicates in simple, declarative sentences. She doesn't use 50 words when she could use 10. The more words you use to communicate your expectations, the less confident you sound. Second, she prefaces her instructions to her students with authoritative phrases like, "I want you to," and "it's time for you to." She says, "It's time for you to take out your math books and turn to page 25," as opposed to, "Let's take out our math books and turn to page 25, okay?" Third, this teacher does not explain the motives behind her instructions to her students. Why? Because she knows that explanations invite arguments. Whenever parents tell me they're dealing with an argumentative child, I know that these well-intentioned people are explaining themselves. They tell their child why they want him to pick up his toys, for example, and he argues, because you can always pick apart an explanation. If you don't explain yourself when you give an instruction to a child, then the child, being a child, is almost surely going to ask for one. He's going to ask, why? Or why not? At which point, get ready for a big surprise. Your answer should be, because I said so. These very useful four words, and no, they will not cause psychological damage to your kids. Quite the contrary. Are a simple but powerful affirmation of the legitimacy of your authority. Say it calmly. Don't scream it. Nothing good is ever accomplished by a person who screams. Last but certainly not least, when giving instructions to a child, do not, let me repeat, do not bend down to the child's level. Getting a child to do what he or she is told is a matter of looking and acting and talking like you have complete confidence in your authority. Bending down to a child's level does not look authoritative. It looks, in fact, like you're one movement away from being down on your knees in front of a king. I know you've read somewhere that you should get down to a child's level when you talk to him. Well, all I can tell you is that there's a lot of really bad parenting advice out there, and that's but one example. Speak to children from an upright position. That causes them to look up to you, and that is a good thing for them and for you both. I'm John Rosemond, author and family psychologist for Prager University.
Number three, finally, St. Paul writes, "In the presence of God and of Christ Jesus, who is to judge the living and the dead, and in view of his appearing and his kingdom, I solemnly urge you, proclaim the message, be persistent whether the time is favorable or unfavorable, convince, rebuke, and encourage with the utmost patience in teaching. So like I said before, St. Paul, he's in Rome. And actually what's happening there is that he's being held captive by the Romans for 2 years awaiting his trial. And eventually he knows he's going to be executed, which does happen. So right now St. Paul, he's thinking like he's in a courtroom. And God the Father and Jesus are his witnesses, and he's putting St. Timothy under an oath. He's saying, look, I'm about to die. This is not a laughing matter. This is serious stuff. I'm telling you, you have to be a good father. You have to be a good spiritual father to these people the way I was a good spiritual father to you. And when it says, urge, again, a more literal translation, I charge you. Don't lose heart. You have to be that good father. A lot of church fathers have commented on the words of proclaiming and convincing, rebuking and encouraging. And Saint Benedict, when he comments on this phrase, he talks about the abbot of a monastery has to try to mingle gentleness and severity together as the occasion calls for it. And one phrase we quite often use for preachers, and this applies for parents, is you have to comfort the afflicted and afflict the comfortable. So comfort the afflicted and afflict the comfortable. So if our children, they're hurting and they're discouraged and they're suffering, you go in there, you build them up and you affirm them, give them that love. But if they're lazy and they're not reaching their potential, you afflict them, of course, with love. Whether the time is favorable or unfavorable, that means we always have to teach. Even by our example, by our words and by our example, Curtis Martin, he's one of the leading Catholic evangelists and leaders in the world. He's a father of 10. He's been so fruitful in his ministry with his own kids and with all these young adults across the United States. And he says, statistically speaking, the two most important things for passing on our faith is Eucharistic adoration and spiritual conversations with parents. Because, remember, by age 22, 91% of Catholic kids fall away from Jesus. Only 9% stay. And the 9% who stay, they had exposure to the Eucharist and adoration, and then spiritual conversations with their parents. And not just about religion, but especially about Jesus and the saints. I had a sort of dream recently, thinking of these spiritual conversations. I could imagine our parish center now being finally built and a place to have so many beautiful spiritual conversations to welcome guests. And I was thinking, we're going to have that big rooftop playground. We're going to hold Alpha on the rooftop. And we're going to invite people to come and take enjoy the view. And then the hope is, above the stage, let's see if we can do it. Above the stage, we're going to build like a youth hangout, like a cave. And it'll be a great place for them. Now, I saw this happen at St. Paul's when I was in Richmond. We had this new parish center, and youth ministry started flourishing. Because what we did is we created an environment where we could grow together as a community. Just like right now, our chapel, it's a perfect environment for prayer. The parish center is going to be that perfect environment for community and growth and evangelization. Now, this is getting us ready. In a month's time, we've got our dinner and dance. And we just want to really support that because this parish center is not like an add-on. It's flowing right from the spiritual heart of everything we do here. We're in right now this season called Made for Mission. We're all being called to serve. And our principal of the school, Mr. Michael Perry, he's looking for some parent volunteers for four things. One, he's looking, would there be any parents here who would be willing to read with our kids? Number two, parents to do lunch supervision. Number three, to help out with catechesis of the Good Shepherd. And four, one person to volunteer for the maintenance role on the parish education committee. The school, it's our biggest evangelization opportunity. 228 kids open to following Jesus. They're not yet disciples, but they are open. If you're interested, please talk to Mr. Perry. And Mr. Perry, he told me to remind all of us parents here. He said, remember that you have more impact on your kids. Have confidence in the impact you can have. So he referred me to this national study of youth and religion that said parents still have more influence on their teens than peers and the media, even when it doesn't seem like it. And so he says, the faith we pass on, it sticks with our kids. And kids who come from Families that practice their faith, they do better in every outcome. Happiness, job success, lower rates of substance abuse and suicide.